The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
And eligible families will receive a monthly payment of up to $300 per month for each child under the age of six, and up to $250 per month for each child age six until the year they turn over age six, sorry, till the year they turn 18.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was, of course, the White House press secretary, Jen Psaki. She said that it was related to new monthly payments for parents, which are going to be issued. You might be excited about it. I thought we'd take a look at these monthly payments that you're going to be getting, how much you're going to get, when will it end, and why we're doing it. ABC 11 will fill you in. Listen to this.
For families facing obstacles in affording child care, help may be on the way. The Treasury Department announcing today that the first monthly payment of the expanded child tax credit from the American Rescue Plan will be made on July 15th, impacting nearly 39 million households. Eligible families will receive up to $300 per month for each child under the age of six, and up to $250 a month for each child 6 to 17 years old. Income limits are based on filing status, phasing out at different levels. Those payments will be made through direct deposit, paper check, or debit cards.
All right, so there you have it. Starting July 15th, mark your calendars. All right, parents, if you have children under the age of 18, you're going to start seeing payments from the federal government. Just show up in your bank account. This is a new program, and it started as a result of the American Rescue Plan that was passed back in February under the program, the child tax credit that people, you know, under a certain income level get when they file their taxes. They're going to have that credit paid out to them in advance. So just very simply, if you have a child under six, you're going to get an annual credit of about $3,600. What will you do with that extra $3,600, right? And if you have multiple kids under six, I remember one time my wife and I had five kids under six. That'd be a heck of a payout, wouldn't it? You're going to be getting $300 payments for each one of those children. For children between the ages of 6 and 18, $50 less. You're going to get about $250 per child. And the program is starting in the middle of the year, so parents are going to get the other half of the credit as a tax refund when they get their taxes next year. You know, so you're going to say, well, you know, you might, maybe you'll owe taxes. Maybe you won't. I don't know. But you can count on the other half of that at least coming your way. But the programming is starting on top of reports about the federal unemployment payments, you know, the extra $300 a week being paid out, causing a lot of people not to work for, not to look for work. So I don't know what the impact of this is going to be. I would think, gosh, I don't know. I know young parents, you know, an extra $300, extra $250 could go a long way to really help them with everything from diapers to clothes to whatever, right? But we've seen what happened when the government began giving a lot of money out. It incentivized people to say, stay home. You see work wanted, if you will, or applications for work all over the place. Businesses want you to come in. But nobody's working, right? Some governors have turned the spigot off on that, saying, look, we're going to pay that money out in a bonus after the person gets a job. That's not a bad idea, but it's only happening in a state-by-state basis. So there is a really big problem with millions of jobs, you know, millions of job openings being available, but nobody right now you know, applying for them. Employers are trying all kinds of things to attract workers, and they're not successful. You know, we've seen signing bonuses, right? We've seen all sorts of incentives to come in. They've raised even the minimum wage. There might be other reasons for this happening. One-fifth of parents, for instance, they say they can't get affordable child care. But a lot of experts are pointing at these extra unemployment payments as kind of being the main culprit of that. But bottom line here, and we're going to speak to Lee Edwards, who's a distinguished fellow in conservative thought at the Heritage Foundation. He's going to be joining me. Final thought here on this, and you're more than welcome to sound off too. Feel free to dial in. Let me know what you think. If you add these monthly tax credits on top of the extra unemployment benefits, this is just food for thought. Where's the incentive to work? You know, why not sit back? Let the government, you know, give you that unemployment, give them that bonus, give you this payout for having kids. Why not let the government fill your bank account automatically, huh? And is this a possible entryway into a form of universal basic income? Is it plowing the field, so to speak, making it fertile for that type of thought? And again, who doesn't like free money, right? Question is, where does it come from? You know, and ultimately, what happens when we run out of it? I'm joined today by, as I said, Lee Edwards. It's good to have him here with us. Also an adjunct professor of politics at the Catholic University of America and the chairman of the foundation that dedicated the Victims of Communism Memorial in Washington, D.C. in 2007. And it's wonderful to have you here with us today. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Thank you so much, Drew. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
This is to talk about this subject.
You know, I want to be sensitive on it, too, because, you know, I understand. I had five children in like 6.5 years, and, you know, there was times it was really tough, and an extra couple hundred dollars here or there per kid would have made a huge difference in my life. I just worry about the apathy and the fact that some people won't go back to work. They'll look at this as an opportunity to take advantage of the government. It might even, as I said, open the doorway to the thought, you know, the acceptance of some universal care.
Well, I think you're right, Drew, and I think that you, in one sense, you can say this is something that certain people have been working towards for 100 years, since Woodrow Wilson and the progressives first beginning to talk about the role of government. And so the question which you're advancing here, it seems to me, is what does this do with regard to people's attitude about government? They're going to say, well, let's have more and more and more government, and we're not going to worry about paying for it because somebody else is going to be taxed, and I don't have to worry about even the fact that this is a free lunch. I welcome the free lunch. I welcome the free education. I welcome the free health care. All of this, I think, I think it can be shown, is a part of what a plan, a century-long plan, which the progressives and the ultra-liberals have been working toward for 400 years, which is to have government as the cord, not just of last resort, but a first resort if there are problems. People have to understand there's going to be a cost to it. At one point, the bill is going to come due, and it may not come due to the people today, but it certainly will come due to people tomorrow and the next day after that.
Who was it? Margaret Thatcher that said, you know, socialism's great until you run out of other people's money. Is she the one who said
yes.
that? that's what I see here. I mean, this is great. There's a lot of people saying, oh, gosh, this is fantastic. Until we run out of other people's money. I mean, socialism, wherever it's been tried, has never worked. It has always failed. And I have grave concerns about what we're now seeing coming out of the Biden administration. And this is not partisan political talk. It's just, you know, trillions of dollars of debt is not a healthy thing for any country. And the Biden administration wants to continue to print and spend money. You know, the child tax credit payment, it just seems to be a situation of taking something people are going to get anyway and give it early. And, you know, will this be good? Let's take the other side of it. Maybe they're going to get it early and say, okay, we're going to pump it into the economy. Is it a good thing in some respects? Am I missing something here?
Well, I think that, you know, it's wonderful because, in a sense, for certain people at a certain level, as you're talking about, Drew, and that is, you know, if they're in need and they're worried about, you know, putting bread on the table, they're worried about getting their kids to be clothed properly and to get to school and to have an occasional movie they can go to and have some popcorn along with it and all the rest of it. But you always have to ask yourself, what is the ultimate cost of it? And what I worry about, and you just said it, and that is, you know, quoting Margaret Thatcher, you run on other yeah. people's money. But what I'm concerned about, yeah. it seems to me, is we could run out of our money.
Right.
Not just the other people's money, yeah. but our money. And what happens then? What happens then is that people at all levels are going to be taxed to make up this difference and to pay for all of these bennies. And that's the situation in places like Sweden and Denmark, which are constantly thrown up to me as, you know, the wonderful socialist country. Well, mm-hmm. They're not socialist. They have a free market which is responsible for their production, their transportation, energy, all the other things that they have. They have a free market economy. But to pay for their welfare system, they have an average of 55% tax.
Wow. Wow.
On their income, 55%.
Wow.
And both there. So what do we are today? I mean, most people pay taxes of maybe half that, a third of that. Some people don't pay any tax, but everybody in Denmark pays something. Everybody. And that's the cost of the welfare state and of a so-called socialist country, which is not really a socialist country.
Well, my guest today is Professor Lee Edwards. If you want to join us, feel free to sound off, 888-914-9149. It's an open conversation here. You may agree, you may disagree. That's fine. Catherine is listening in Medford Lake, New Jersey. Actually has six kids. She sees this as a positive. Catherine, good afternoon. It's good to have you here.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. Hi, Professor Edwards. You know, when I first heard this, I thought, this is outrageous. We can't afford this. And I still believe we can't afford this, but I look at it's my daughter. My daughter and her husband live in Massachusetts. She's pregnant with their sixth child. It's a very expensive state. She stays at home with the children. Her husband doesn't make all that much money.
Right.
They send the first three to a independent Catholic school. And obviously they're facing a situation where at some point she will have to work to help pay for that tuition. So I look at this as an opportunity for them to keep her at home with the children and also to keep the children in this independent Catholic school.
Yep.
And maybe one day have all six of them there without her having to go to work.
That's great.
And maybe, I don't think that the studies bear this out, but maybe it will encourage other families to have more children. And we certainly have a shortage in this country of children being born.
Yeah.
So, I see it as something. I have no idea how we're going to afford it, but I do see some benefit.
Yeah, it's a lot of great points. Like I said,
my family.
Yeah. And Catherine, I said the same thing. I had five kids, almost 5 years, like I was saying. We had one just about every year. And honestly, at that point in time, to get a bump like this, I would have been doing the happy dance. I would have loved it because it does help. And just like unemployment as well. I mean, look, I hate to broad brush things and say everything is totally bad because there are certain people who are certainly going to benefit from it and are going to use it properly, and that's why it's established. But I think you bring up a great point. So, Doctor, let's talk about Catherine's points.
She questions
the payment, but what are the benefits of it for some? Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor, that was you. Doctor, restate that.
Yeah, if you have a crisis, then who's going to help? And then the government has a role to play in a crisis. And certainly no one can deny that we're in a crisis right now coming out of the pandemic, that our economy took a heck of a hit. And so, therefore, people need help. They need that extra bit from the government. And I think that even the most hard-hearted libertarian and individualist would agree with that. But you cannot say this is a precedent now, that from now on, you can expect that. You've got to understand that at some point, those payments are going to stop. So maybe put part of it aside. Don't spend all of it. Be prudent in how you spend it as well. And if people understand that, then I agree with you, Drew. I think there can, Catherine, I think there can be some possible role for it. But not if it's a precedent and not if it's a continuing payment from the government. Because that way it's just bankruptcy.
Yeah, and I want to go back to the votes, but let me just ask you where it leads. Okay, because like I said, I know that the unemployment benefit, the tax credit for the child, that will certainly help a certain segment of the population. There's also others who I think take advantage of that. There's been talk that, this is part of a much larger agenda, something that some of the liberals in government would really like to see, and that is a basic universal income at some point in time. And this is a good way, at least, to dip the toe in the water. Do you have any concern regarding that? And do you see this as a possible entryway into that philosophy and that approach?
Well, that's even in some place like Sweden and Denmark, which are always thrown up, as socialist countries, which they're not. Even they, though, do not have that kind of a guaranteed income. They depend upon the market to produce profit, to produce the income that they can then tax to pay for the welfare state. It's an interesting balance which they've been able to achieve there. But let's keep in mind that Sweden is only 10 million, we're 330 million. And so it's going to be a heck of a lot more complicated than it is just to simply try to write out a check for people. But even, as I say, even Sweden doesn't try to do that. What is that going to do? Is that consistent with the American ideal of being able to, you know, achieve whatever goal you want if you work hard enough and long enough and if you have enough creativity and commitment and so forth? Is that in keeping with the American dream, with the American spirit, with the American ideal? And I think you can begin to say, wait a minute now, does that really do it? Isn't this, or is this part of what the socialists in this country, you can call them progressive, if you will, are saying, and that is to increase the size of government, to drive out the market, to limit the role of the individual, because they believe that a bureaucracy out in Washington, D.C. can make better decisions about how you and I and Catherine want to live and conduct our lives than we can.
Right. All right, let's move along. We'll take another call or two. Michael's listening in Kokana, Wisconsin. Michael, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you so much. I agree with most of what your guest is saying, almost 100%. But I was taken aback a little bit by your statement, Drew, and you said that what is the incentive for people to work? There are a lot of hardworking people out there that were really pushed aside by this pandemic. It's mostly people working in the service sector, hotels, restaurants, that type of person who were really, really put aside, who did have, just could not work. I was lucky to work through the pandemic. I'm working a professional position. I've actually worked harder and more hours during the pandemic. The industry I'm in is actually being stressed by the pandemic. And so it's been good for me. When the times are down, my times are up. But please be careful when you say things like people. There are people that are going to gain the system, but there are a lot of people there who are being hurt. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, Michael, it's a good point, and I hope I clarified that a few moments ago when I made the case that I don't like to broad brush things, that there are certain segments of the population that certainly can be benefited from this. And no doubt in my mind, I think of the dry cleaners. I think of the people in the travel agencies. I have a friend who's a travel agent. People in restaurants and service industries, they were hammered by this, and they suffered. And this really helped them bridge the gap. So I think it really served a purpose. The extension of it, I question a little bit. I saw a news report the other day just to validate the other side of the equation. There was a motel owner, and he says, people are back. Now they're vaccinated. Now they're out. I says, I could rent so many more rooms in this hotel of mine, this motel. He says, but I don't have anyone who wants to come and work to clean the rooms, to change the beds, because they're making more at home than they are actually coming to work. So, look, it's not any single case. Like I said, I think there are people who always take advantage of opportunities when they can. I'm not saying everybody does that. And to your point, I think there's a lot of people who benefited from it, and I think that's a solid point. Professor, do you want to follow up on that at all?
I think I'd generally agree with what you're saying, Drew, but I would just say that hopefully what would happen is that, again, the market, which we still have, would work this out, that people would see that, well, I'm getting sick and tired of sitting around here on my duff. I want to get out and get back into working, because I think that people really sort of manifest what they're really all about and who they really are by working and not by staying home, watching TV, knocking back a six-pack or two. Right. And I think that there's enough of the American spirit left that most people would not become addicted, hopefully. Right. Would not become addicted to that payout from the federal government.
Christy is listening in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Christy, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation.
Hi, thank you.
Great. Go right ahead, Christy. Good to have you.
Yeah, so my comment, it kind of brings in a few things, but I think there's a lot of people out there that they really, really do want to work, but realistically, they're getting more money from, you know, just the COVID relief, these new payouts they're talking about. And they're just trying to live and pay rent, much less, you know, thinking about things like student loans for so many individuals that are crippling. And
yeah, I agree.
You know, when you think about those things, they don't want to be lazy and not go to work. It's that they're just trying to survive. And this is the best way for them to do that right now. And I think there needs to be a way to assist people to get them on their feet so that they can contribute to the economy in a way that they want to.
It's a great point, Christy. If you have student loans, my heart goes out to you. I think they're crippling to so many Americans today. It's a tough thing. And I think there was a proposal, Professor, to her point, you know, people do want to work. Why not make this a bonus? Make that payout a bonus, you know, speaking of the unemployment extension there, for when you get the job, you know, you get a big old check. But, you know, there are people who can't get jobs, like the last caller said, who are in the service industry. So it's a tough situation. I don't envy those who have to make those decisions.
I just think what we're talking about, Drew, is just constantly evaluating it to see whether it's successful or not. Yeah. You know, if there's a groundswell of people saying, you know, I'm fine now. I want to go back to work. Let's try to work something out along those lines, rather than just sitting back and accepting welfare payment after welfare payment. Yeah. Has to be things to be constantly evaluated by the administration, by the Congress, by governors, by mayors. Yeah. And I think we've got to work together, don't we, Drew? Because we really have been in a crisis. And let's come together. I think that's what let's go back to e pluribus unum and not many out of one, which is what we have too much of these days.
I love it. Regina, you have to make your comment quick. It's good to have you here. Thanks for listening in Chicago.
I'm not happy all about these bonuses that the president is giving. I owe the government tax 2018.
Yeah. I'm prepaid. You know, Regina, I'm sorry to do this, but your signal is so bad, it's not intelligible. I can't really hear your comment. I have to take a short break, but stay with me. When we come back, we're speaking with Professor Lee Edwards. We're taking a look at the child tax credit advance payment. We're taking a look at universal income and even hints of socialism. Has it ever worked? In fact, coming up a little bit later in the conversation, I want to talk about Catholic social doctrine. You know, the church has written several documents on this, and we can talk about what the church teaches about the dignity of work, about Catholic principles, about subsidiarity, and so much more. Stay with us. The conversation continues right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
No one should be allowed to game the system, and we'll insist the law is followed, but let's not take our eye off the ball. Families who are just trying to put food on the table, keep a roof over their head, they aren't the problem. We need to stay focused on the real problems in front of us, beating this pandemic and creating jobs. Again, the law is clear. If you're receiving unemployment benefits and you're offered a suitable job, you can't refuse that job and just keep getting the unemployment benefits.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was the President Joe Biden, and of course, talking about this. This extra payment, if you will, to be on unemployment. I know it helped a lot of people during the pandemic. I've seen a lot of pundits say, hey, but it is also motivated now that the pandemic is somewhat behind us. The majority of Americans, 60% of this country, has been vaccinated, at least with one shot. There are certain people that are still not going back to work. So maybe we should distinguish, you know, pandemic at its zenith versus where we are right now. There's also this proposal coming forth. In fact, as of July 15th, if you have a child under six, you'll automatically get $3,600, $300 a month payment for you, and the rest as a tax refund. If you have a child that is 6 to 18 years of age, it'll be $250. So if you've got a big family, I've got some friends that have 7 and 8 kids, it could be a big payout for them. So, but we'll see. And you know, it blesses a lot of families. It helps a lot of families. But there is some concern where this might lead. You might remember the Democratic candidates when they were during the last election debating. I remember them on the stage. They were all talking about how to make health care free, higher education free, the forgiveness of student loan debts. And believe me, these are all problems. I've got kids that carry student loan debts. I understand. My heart goes out to anyone who has that. And then you'll hear people come in and say, well, what about the Nordic countries? You know, look at what they've done. And then you have certain senators and certain people in the country who floated universal basic income for states. So we are at a strange new time, and this concept is being floated. I thought it'd be great just to talk about it with you today to better understand it and see what the implications of it are. And I've invited to the conversation today Professor Lee Edwards, and I was telling him during the break how much I enjoy his rationality and his calm demeanor. I do. It's good to talk with you, Professor.
Thank you, Drew, so much for having me back.
So where, before we go to the phones, where does this go? I'm just curious as to how you see things evolving. You know, we have a different administration today. That could change in a couple of years. But how do you see things unfolding?
Well, I'm concerned, Drew, because if we continue to have a constant increase of government, and if we continue to have things like the individual out there trying to be a little bit different, if he is not going to be allowed to be that, then I'm concerned. Is this administration, and I think trying to do the right thing, trying to help people who are in need at a time of crisis, we all have to agree and understand about that. Yeah. And that's one thing. But are we leading to a situation where people are going to automatically always expect the government to help it? Yeah. And what does that do to the American way, which has been built on much more rugged individualism than that kind of constant government help and government subsidization? So I just think we have to be very, very careful about that. Is this going to be something that becomes permanent in our lives?
Yeah. That's such,
and who's
such
going
a
to pay
point.
For it?
That's such a great point. Two great important questions. Adriana is listening in Los Angeles. Adriana, welcome. You're on the air with Professor Lee Edwards.
Thank you, Drew and Professor. I was just going to comment that I've seen both sides of people not wanting to work in really good jobs because they were making more on unemployment. And I've seen the people that are still waiting for unemployment to either approve or deny their claim. So my thought was, why not invest that money that they want to give out monthly starting July 15th for the children, the payments, to invest that in the economy, help the small businesses, especially the ones that had to close, and that way you help the people get, everybody gets back on their feet that way. Because, I mean, I know people are struggling, but you don't want to depend on that. And I would much rather see that money go towards opening up all the small businesses that will then employ people long term.
Well, I think that's a wonderful point. And as a matter of fact, a part of this, the particular programs which the Biden administration are putting forward are intended to be loans to small businesses. I know some friends of mine who have been receiving some of those, and that has resulted in their being able to hire some people and to even talk about maybe expanding their business. And you know, these are mom-and-pop operations, not GM and GE kind of a thing. So, yes, that's something which is part of what's going on right now. And after all, small business produces more than 50% of the jobs in this country. So they're a vital part of our economy and need to be helped so they're not hurt by this kind of a crisis that we've been trying to come out of.
Yeah, well said. Susie in St. Charles, Illinois. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Professor Edwards.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Professor. I just want some clarification. All families are going to get this money, or like our daughter and her husband work full-time. They make good money. Yeah. They have two little kids. Are they going to get that money?
Yeah, my understanding is it goes out to everyone. It goes out. And Professor, maybe you can clarify the point if you're aware of that. My understanding is if you have a child that's under certain age, you get that payout. Are you familiar? Is there any income cap on that?
I'm not familiar with the particulars of that, so I just can't speak to it. But that's a vital question.
And, on second thought, I do. I think there is an income cap. They can't just give that money out. There is an income cap. I don't know what that number is. And maybe if Patrick's on my board or one of my call screens, maybe you can look that up. See what the income cap is. So I'll share that when we come back. That's a great point, Susie. Thank you. But I don't think you have to be on unemployment or anything else. I just think that if you make under X amount of dollars, my understanding is that you'll get that $300 a month for any child under 6, and any child between 6 and 18, $250 a month. We'll get that for you momentarily. So hopefully we'll dig that number up.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an income cap. I'm absolutely positive of it, in fact. Let me go to who's next while we wait for that info. Is it Abby listening in Flagstaff, Arizona? Hi, Abby. Good afternoon.
Hi. So there is a cap. It's $150,000 for a married couple.
Perfect.
$150,000.
Thank you for that.
So that's kind of my question. My husband makes very good money, and I stay at home with 5 children. We don't really need the stimulus. He's always been employed. Our kids go to Catholic school. We also don't need this child care tax, whatever it is. What do we do with that money that automatically gets deposited, whether we want it or not?
All right, what a great question. So are you asking, can you turn it back and say no? I would donate it to a very worthy cause or use it.
That's exactly it. To your favorite Catholic charity, or maybe even if you can find a good Protestant one as well.
Yeah, amen to that. So yeah, I don't know if you can return it, Abby. I mean, maybe you can reject it. I don't know how that process goes. Seems like it might be a lot of work. Relevant Radio is a great nonprofit for you, but there's a lot of good, you know, people who might need help with their education. Or I mean, there's lots of causes, pro-life groups. I would use it in a positive way.
For sure. When we donate to the Sisters of Life, they're our favorite ladies. So
there
maybe that's the route we'll go.
That sounds great. You can always increase your donation. Sounds good. Thank you. It's a great question. Thanks for bringing clarity to that. Again, the income levels, as she pointed out, is $150,000 for married couples for that. And Jake is confirming that for me right now, too. So that's great. That's a good question. I love her heart. Hey, we don't need it. What should we do with it? You know, can we not take it? Well, I would use it for a cause that advances the common good somehow. I think that's a great thing. Let's sneak another call in here. Denver, Colorado is on deck. Gabe is listening to us there. Hi, Gabe. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
I lost
my job 2 months ago. I had that job for 28 and a half years. So it's not somebody who's ever tried to get unemployment. I've worked for 43 years. Well, it's become such a difficulty to go online. You go online and everything goes online. You look at it, but no funds come through. So you call these numbers over and over, and they say, do you need a virtual callback? And then they tell you, I'm sorry, all virtual callbacks are filled. So I finally got through, and they say they can call me June 4th. So now I've gone 2 months with nothing, and a lot of people think that extra $300, everyone's going to get that. That ended Christmas Eve. So I'm just trying to get regular straight unemployment for the first time in my life, and I'm about 61 years old, and it's unbelievable. And then you think, if you can't pay your bills or you can't pay for your cell phone, how are you going to communicate with them to even keep connected? And I've gone as far as calling the governor's office, but got no call back from there either. So, you know, you're just kind of locked in, and being an older person, you're not always on top of every, you know, fighting these online systems.
Hey, I'm sorry for the struggle, Gabe, that you're going through. Persist. I think you're doing the right things. Maybe you can go down to the office itself if there's somebody who can help you locally there. But, Professor, some final thoughts from you and maybe some advice for her as she runs into these problems.
Well, I think she's just showing the wonderful initiative that's so much in the American spirit. It just makes you proud to be an American. I just think this, that we've been through a terrible, terrible time with both the economy tanking, really, the pandemic, other problems that we've had with law and order, and we know all about that as well.
Sure.
So, but we're going to come out of this okay, because I think that this government assistance, I think, really may continue for a year, but it's not going to be permanent, because I think that too many people are going to be saying, look, I don't want to sit home. I want to go out there and work, because that's what defines us, most of us anyway, is what we do and how we work. So that, to me, is going to bring us through, ultimately, this particular situation of government when you need it, but not when you don't need it.
Amen to that. Professor, thank you for your time. Always enjoy connecting with you. If people want to follow you, read your work, what's the best way to do that?
Heritage.org.
All right, great institution. Thank you, Professor. We'll talk again soon, I hope, okay? Thanks.
All the best. Take care.
Thank you so much. That's Professor Lee Edwards. Stay with me. I have to take a short break. When we come back, okay, we're going to change gears slightly. I want to take a look at this from a Catholic perspective as well. You know, the great Pope St. John Paul the Great wrote encyclicals on this. There's a great encyclical he wrote on in 1981. I believe it's called Laborum Exercens, if I'm recalling that correctly. And he said that, you know, work is one of the characteristics that distinguish men from the rest of creatures. And it's so important. I want to talk about the dignity of work, why it's so important. We can talk about other Catholic principles too, subsidiarity and so many of these other issues that all play into this. And if you want to join me, you're welcome to join anytime. Number here is 888-914-9149. Dr. Joseph Capizzi is on standby, a great professor of moral theology from Catholic U. He'll join the conversation right after this.
Work. Americans want to work. As my dad used to say, a job's about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity, your place in the community, being able to look your kid in the eye and say everything's going to be okay. I think the people who claim Americans won't work, even if they find a good and fair opportunity, underestimate the American people.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's, of course, the president, Joe Biden. And with this abundance of unemployment positions and the dearth of people willing to fill them up, it can make you stop and think about the value of work. And I think it's an important conversation to have. It's one of those qualities of human nature that actually helps us, it really helps define us against the rest of the animal kingdom, as I was quoting Pope John Paul the Great a few moments ago. Of course, look, with work, we're also following what God did, right? His work of creation. It's kind of an archetype of work. And since we're made in his image and likeness, we should be doing what he does. But of course, look, there's a lot of different types of work. Not all of them have the same level of responsibility. Not all of them give you the same kind of payment. You know, the person that, you know, cleans the school is going to be doing a different work on a different pay scale than, let's say, the CEO of a major company. We humans value those different types of work differently. But that's not necessarily how God sees it. And that's the thing I think we need to take a look at today. See work as God sees it. See the inherent dignity in no matter what you do, right? There's a great merit and value. The Opus Dei is Father Rocky is a priest of Opus Dei. He heads up Relevant Radio. And the theology of St. Jose Maria Escriva, I always appreciated the philosophy that you can grow in holiness. You can grow in sanctity through whatever your vocation in life is. So whether you're the janitor or whether you're the CEO, you know, it doesn't matter what your position is, that's a pathway, an avenue for sanctity. And I thought we'd talk about the dignity of work today. Dr. Joseph Capizzi joins me. He's a professor of moral theology at the Catholic University of America. Also the co-author of a book that's now out in its third edition, The Catechism for Business: Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. That's a must for your spiritual library. You know, a great reference for you there. And, of course, it's good to have him here with us. He heads up the Department for the Institute of Human Ecology, and you'll find that at Catholic University of America. Or just do a quick search for it. It's good to have you with me today, Doctor. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Drew. My pleasure to be back.
So let's start with this. I mean, we have all this talk about basic income, people wanting to work, not wanting to work, a whole litany of conversations going on in the secular, culture right now. But I want to talk about it. I want to look at it through the eyes of our faith. Maybe you can define for us work and how God sees it and what he wants from us.
Great question. You started by talking about Pope John Paul II, and I think that's a really good place to begin because he's the one pope who devoted an entire encyclical to this question. And I think maybe the basic way to understand work is human engagement with the world in conformity with God's intention for it, right? It's a kind of co-participation in God's own creative activity. Now, that sounds extraordinarily noble, right, and almost like removed from the way most of us approach our work. But it's, it's a model. It's an aspiration for the way that we should be thinking about what it is as human beings we're doing when we're engaging in the kinds of things that we do every day.
Yeah, it's so well said. You know what John Paul said, and I was reading him earlier today, that it struck me. It was that quote where he says, work is one of the characteristics that distinguish man from the rest of creatures. And he went on to say whose activity for sustaining themselves, for their lives, can't be called work. Animals can't call that work. Only man, he says, is capable of work. Only man works. So because of that, to me, it just, you know, it resonated with me that God really must find something very special in this, and it can really be a pathway to holiness. Unfortunately, we look at everything through temporal lens, how much money you make, you know, what title you hold, you know, how prestigious the job is. That's not the case in the eyes of God, is it?
No, it's not. And actually, part of what you're describing and what John Paul II is getting at is it's a means by which human beings can fulfill themselves, right? So work being this distinctive realm of activity to human beings is really the place where we can be as fully human as possible. We can approach to God through this kind of activity. And what's interesting, of course, is animals do all kinds of things that we would think of as work. In fact, we use them often as instruments for work. But what John Paul II is getting at, and I think what our tradition is getting at, is what distinguishes us from them is precisely in the way that work conforms to our dignity, to what it means to be fully human beings. And that then becomes a measure by which we judge the kinds of things that we're doing. Does this stuff, you know, is the work that I'm doing actually making me more human, actually conforming, you know, to what God intends for me, and so on?
So here's something I was pondering, you know, before the fall, right? Adam and Eve did not have to work. They did not have to toil. They did not have to labor, right? And who likes work sometimes? Some jobs can be a real drag, dragging yourself out of bed early in the morning to do something maybe you don't really appreciate or like. When sin entered the world, things changed. So does God really want work? Is it a punishment that God allowed to be redeeming for us? I mean, how does the fall, how does creation, what happened after the fall, how does all that play into this?
Yeah, great question. I mean, obviously the experience of toil, work as, you know, labor, you know, the way we think about the word labor, you know, its multiple meanings, becomes a part of our experience of engaging the world. One imagines that in Eden, Adam and Eve could have still undertaken projects, right? They would have still done the kind of creative activity that we associate often with work at its highest, but the experience of work as drudgery and as toil and as hard, as bringing about suffering, that's all a function of human sinfulness, of our fall, and the ways that, you know, work only approximates now what really it ought to be, this real sort of like co-laboring with God, this co-activity with God, you know, done by human beings at their fullest. So yeah, no question that sin changes the experience for us. And now we know we can also convert that suffering into, you know, a kind of salvific orientation too, right? That too can help us grow as human beings. So God hasn't abandoned us, right? It's not like it's a punishment, you know, simply, you know, we're left to our own devices now. No, it's still working on our nature. It's still building on who we are as human beings.
I love it. My guest today, Dr. Joe Capizzi. If you want to join us, I only have a few minutes left in my broadcast today. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to sound off. The numbers 888-914-9149. Hey, Dr. Todd is listening in Lexington, Kentucky, and he's got a comment about work. Joe, good afternoon. Or Todd, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. You know, I have been unemployed in the past. There's nothing dignified about being unemployed. In fact, it really is kind of dehumanizing. And to stand in an unemployment line to receive a benefit, and you're looking across at a government worker who's less than cordial, you realize that they look upon you, at least in my experience, as something less than human. There's dignity in work. Even if it's a temporary thing until something more permanent can come along, there's dignity in work because you're actually doing something, even if it's productive on the smallest scale, and as long as it's honorable work.
Yep.
What I do now, I've been doing for nearly 27 years, working in an automobile factory, and it's hard work, but it's at times very gratifying work. But at least I don't feel that awful feeling of... that comes from not having work. To me, going, I'll just stick on the government dole and take from them. them as long as I can because it pays better than what I do. They right. just can't be very satisfying.
Hey, Todd, thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate your contribution to the conversation. And, Doctor, I'll let you respond to him.
Yeah, no, Todd, you bring up a whole bunch of great points. My grandfather was out of work for 2 years, and I know it. I mean, I know you're right. It's dehumanizing, right, to be out of work. And I think part of what you're describing is that humans are beings that need to have purposes, right? They need to have a sense that they're doing something and contributing something meaningful. And work is one way by which we're able to do that. Yeah. And I think one thing that you're kind of pointing to, even in that feeling of being dehumanized, standing in the line by somebody who's judging you, is we want to create a culture where everybody understands that work, even uncompensated work, right, is meaningful, purposeful, and we want that to spread as much as possible so people don't feel left out, even when they're unemployed, even when they're no longer compensated for work, because they're still doing all sorts of things and right, engaging, you know, their lives, their families, and so on. And we have to do a much better job, I think, as a culture, to see the meaningfulness of work, to see its relationship to human dignity, and to spread that as much as possible throughout our culture in ways that extend beyond even compensated labor, right? Because what happens is we get blind to how all the work that's done in uncompensated ways, and then if a person falls out of work and they're on the dole, as, you know, Todd put it, you know, then of course we judge them. We judge them as inferior in some way or deficient in some way, and that's a clear failing culturally, socially, yeah, that we need to overcome.
I love Todd's attitude too. You know, he works in an auto factory, right? And I'm just thinking, okay, right, you work for right. a large company, you're working in an assembly line factory. So often you're viewed as a cog in a wheel. You know, you're there to put the bolts right. in this particular, you know, part of the car. And it can make work, I think, maybe a drag. Maybe you'll even feel unappreciated. But how do you, if you're in a job like his or any others, where you just don't feel that it's dignified or it's appreciated or it's value, what advice would you give to the worker itself to recognize that, hey, that's not necessarily the case?
Yeah, and what's great about the way Todd described it was clear he doesn't experience this, right? Somehow he has found the meaningfulness, the purposefulness of the work that he's doing, even though it's the kind of work that, you know, we typically think of as drudgery or something. The notion of dignity, right, that we attach to work and that John Paul II attaches to work, really, it's not about, are you a factory worker or are you a professor? Are you elite or professional or whatever, right? Instead, it's about, is this work good, right? Is it work that is in accordance with the common good, right? The good of your community? Does it conduce to the good of your family? Is it good for you? Does it build you up? That's right. These are the measures of the dignity of work, not, you know, how many degrees do you have? How many zeros at the end of your paycheck at the end of the week? And again, it's a social failing of ours, right? That so much of our work, you know, and its quote unquote dignity is measured in much more materialistic terms. And we've got to somehow try to transform the way we think about this, because all of this good, legitimate work of the sort Todd is describing, this is, we need this. This is necessary, right? And it has a purpose. It has a meaning. We need Todd. We need people
I
like him.
Certainly do. That's so true. That's such a wonderful point. Doctor, I only have a moment or two left here. Your book,
sure,
A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from a Catholic Perspective.
Right.
Catholic teaching. If people want to get that, how do they do that, and what kind of value? I mean, what's in it, and you know, how will it bless them or merit them?
Yeah. Yeah, so the book is really set up in almost like the Baltimore Catechism style, questions and answers. And these are questions that have come up over my career and over the career of my co-author, awesome, you know, as we've engaged people. Just so we just, you know, post kinds of questions like, what is a just wage or a family wage?
Yeah.
And then we look through the tradition and we try to find the answers to those things. It's not interpretation. It's really guiding the reader towards what our faith says in response to all these kinds of questions. Amazon.com still carries it. Obviously, BarnesandNoble.com also carries it. So it should be coming out very, very soon in the third edition. I do encourage people, if they're willing and able, to buy it.
I certainly would love to get a copy of it. So when that third edition comes out, I'm going to try to put it on my in my library of books too. I have there's certain books I love just to reference, and that is a great one. And you brought up the issue of just wage.
It's a great reference text.
On a separate note, since you brought that up, I mean, there's talk, and I have less than a minute, so make this really quick. Minimum wage, you're talking about raising that. Your thoughts on just wage? What does the church teach regarding that?
Okay, so the general principle here is that work should conform to human beings and not human beings to work. And human beings are not simply, you know, Drew or Joe. They are Drew as the father of a family, Joe as the father of a family, you know, Mary as the mother of a family, people in their actual lives. And wages ought to compensate people so they can live the lives that they occupy, right? That's the church's teaching, right? We should be paid a family wage to support ourselves as social beings.
I love that. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll have to have you back to talk about that. When that book's out, make sure you let my producer and me know, and we'll get you back on. Doctor, thank you.
Thanks
for your time. That's Professor Joe Capizzi. Check out the book, Catechism for Business. I'm out of time for the day. Have a great one. This is about bringing Jesus Christ to others. It's about giving hope to people who don't have any.
We're talking about the life and death of souls here. This is high-stakes stuff.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media.
It's full on. I found my way back to God.
Relevant Radio.